Let's read together Acts chapter 7, verses 1 through 43. In these verses, we have the first part of Stephen's testimony before the Jewish council, that is, the Sanhedrin, the ruling body of the Jews. Let's begin by reading verses 1 through 19. Acts chapter 7, beginning at verse 1. Then the high priest said, "Are these things so?" And he said, "Brethren and fathers, listen. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he dwelt in Haran, and said to him, 'Get out of your country and from your relatives and come to a land that I will show you.' Then he came out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Haran. And from there, when his father was dead, he moved him to this land in which you now dwell. And God gave him no inheritance in it, not even enough to set his foot on. But even when Abraham had no child, he promised to give it to him for a possession and to his descendants after him. But God spoke in this way, that his descendants would dwell in a foreign land, and that they would bring them into bondage and oppress them 400 years. And the nation to whom they will be in bondage I will judge, said God, and after that they shall come out and serve me in this place." Then he gave him the covenant of circumcision. And so Abraham begot Isaac and circumcised him on the eighth day. And Isaac begot Jacob, and Jacob begot the 12 patriarchs. And the patriarchs, becoming envious, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God was with him and delivered him out of all his troubles and gave him favor and wisdom in the presence of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And he made him governor over Egypt and all his house. Now a famine and great trouble came over all the land of Egypt and Canaan, and our fathers found no sustenance. But when Jacob heard that there was grain in Egypt, he sent out our fathers first. And the second time, Joseph was made known to his brothers, and Joseph's family became known to the Pharaoh. Then Joseph sent and called his father Jacob and all his relatives to him, 75 people. So Jacob went down to Egypt, and he died, he and our fathers. And they were carried back to Shechem and laid in the tomb that Abraham bought for a sum of money from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem. But when the time of the promise drew near, which God had sworn to Abraham, the people grew and multiplied in Egypt, till another king arose who did not know Joseph. This man dealt treacherously with our people and oppressed our forefathers, making them expose their babies so that they might not live. Let's begin our study this morning with some background notes. We read in Acts chapter 6 and verse 7 that the word of God spread, and the number of the disciples multiplied greatly in Jerusalem, and a great many of the priests were obedient to the faith. The early growth of Christianity was phenomenal. Even a great number of the Jewish priests were becoming believers. Why was it that so many Jewish priests, of all people, were becoming Christians? Answer: they knew the truth about the resurrection of Christ. They knew that there was no natural explanation for the empty tomb. And they knew that the story of the disciples stealing the body was made up. After all, it was the chief priests who had bribed the soldiers to propagate this lie. And the priests also knew about the heavy veil in the temple that had been ripped from top to bottom, opening the way into the Holy of Holies. With all of these priests becoming believers, we can understand why the Sanhedrin wanted to stamp out Christianity as soon as possible. So they arrested Stephen and questioned him on trumped-up charges and tried to find legal fault with Stephen and his message. Stephen used it as an opportunity to preach, and a good portion of his sermon before the Sanhedrin recounted Israel's mistreatment of God's messengers, including Joseph and Moses. Now, why did Stephen emphasize Israel's rejection of God's messengers, particularly Joseph and Moses? Stephen was obviously drawing a parallel between Israel's past rejection of these messengers with Israel's present rejection of Christ, God's greatest messenger. Israel had not changed her ways. She was still in rebellion against God. And that brings us now to our doctrinal teaching points for this first half of Acts chapter 7. Doctrine point number one: Israel's rejection of Joseph foreshadowed Israel's rejection of Christ. Israel's rejection of Joseph foreshadowed Israel's rejection of Christ. In verses 1 through 19, the verses that we just read, Stephen started out his sermon by giving the nation's history beginning with Abraham. But Stephen moved quickly on from Abraham to Joseph. The 400 years of bondage in verse 6 is not a contradiction with Galatians 3:17 and Exodus 12:40, which say 430 years. No, Stephen was just quoting here the promise that God made to Abraham in Genesis 15, where the round number of 400 is used in the prophecy. And the number in verse 14 of 75 persons in Egypt is not in disagreement with the number of 70 mentioned in Genesis 46:27. Stephen here included the sons and grandsons of Ephraim and Manasseh, who were already in Egypt when Jacob arrived. And in verse 16, it seems that Stephen condensed the accounts of Abraham and Jacob buying parcels of land in Canaan for burial of the patriarchs, both at Hebron and at Shechem. Now, it's hard to miss the parallel that Stephen wants his listeners to draw between the rejection of Joseph by his own brothers and the rejection of Christ by his own people. Joseph, of course, is one of the great types or spiritual pictures of Christ in the Old Testament. As Joseph was rejected by his brothers, who were the patriarchs of Israel, but then raised to power over Egypt by God, so Christ was rejected by Israel, but raised to power over this whole world. And as Joseph's brothers, the patriarchs of Israel, later had to recognize and bow to Joseph, so Israel, in a coming day, will recognize and bow to Christ as their once rejected Messiah. So Joseph is a wonderful Old Testament spiritual picture or type of Israel's rejected Messiah. And Stephen certainly wanted his listeners to see this. Israel's rejection of Joseph foreshadowed Israel's rejection of Christ. Doctrinal point number 2. Israel's rejection of Moses foreshadowed Israel's rejection of Christ. Israel's rejection of Moses foreshadowed Israel's rejection of Christ. Verses 20 through 43. Acts chapter 7, beginning now at verse 20. At this time Moses was born and was well pleasing to God, and he was brought up in his father's house for 3 months. But when he was set out, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and brought him up as her own son. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in words and deeds. Now when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended and avenged him who was oppressed, and struck down the Egyptian. For he supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand. But they did not understand. And the next day appeared to two of them as they were fighting, and tried to reconcile them, saying, "Men, you are brethren. Why do you wrong one another?" And he who did his neighbor wrong pushed him away, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you did the Egyptian yesterday?" Then at this saying, Moses fled and became a dweller in the land of Midian, where he had two sons. And when 40 years had passed, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire in a bush in the wilderness of Mount Sinai. When Moses saw it, he marveled at the sight. And as he drew near to observe, the voice of the Lord came to him, saying, "I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses trembled and dared not look. Then the Lord said to him, "Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground. I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their groaning and have come down to deliver them. And now come, I will send you to Egypt." This Moses, whom they rejected, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge?" is the one God sent to be a ruler and a deliverer by the hand of the angel who appeared to him in the bush. So he brought them out. And after he had shown wonders and signs in the land of Egypt and in the Red Sea and in the wilderness 40 years, this is that Moses who said to the children of Israel, "The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. Him you shall hear. This is he who was in the congregation in the wilderness with the angel who spoke to him on Mount Sinai and with our fathers, the one who received the living oracles to give to us, whom our fathers would not obey but rejected. And in their hearts they turned back to Egypt, saying to Aaron, make us gods to go before us. As for this Moses, who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And they made a calf in those days, offered sacrifices to the idols, and rejoiced in the works of their own hands. Then God turned and gave them up to worship the host of heaven, as it is written in the book of the prophets. Did you offer me slaughtered animals and sacrifices during 40 years in the wilderness, O house of Israel? You also took up the tabernacle of Molech and the star of your god, Rephan, images which you made to worship, and I will carry you away beyond Babylon. In verse 43, Stephen quoted from Amos chapter 5. We see here that during their wanderings in the wilderness, Israel was involved in idolatry. This idolatry was in addition to the worship of the golden calf. They rejected God and they rejected his servant Moses. Stephen's purpose in recounting at length the life of Moses is to show in no uncertain terms that Moses was prepared and handpicked by God to be a special servant. But Israel rejected Moses. Verse 35 says they rejected or disowned him. In verse 37, Stephen specifically drew the parallel between Moses and Christ when he quoted the messianic prophecy of Deuteronomy 18:15. Look at verse 37 once again. The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. Him you shall hear. Here is a clear reference to Christ in Stephen's testimony about Moses. And now look at verse 39. Whom our fathers would not obey, but rejected. Stephen is certainly driving home his point to the Sanhedrin. Israel's rejection of Moses foreshadowed Israel's rejection of Christ. Now, what about practical application from this portion of Acts chapter 7? Trust God to use your rejection as a testimony. Trust God to use your rejection as a testimony. Suppose you had been Moses back in Egypt and in the wilderness trying to help Israel, and yet the very people you're trying to help disown you and say, who made you a ruler and a judge? Verse 35. And they repudiate you. Verse 39. Would you have had any idea at that time how God was going to use this rejection as part of Stephen's main argument before the Sanhedrin 1,500 years later? Of course not. But God knew. In the same way today, we may not appreciate how God is going to use our disappointments and rejections in his overall good plans for our lives and the lives of others. The way you handle disappointment and adversity and rejection can be a great testimony to others of your Christian character. Others are watching and will remember for years to come. It may even be written about, and it will be remembered in heaven forever. So trust God to use your rejection as a testimony.